You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd just like to welcome all of you here to our seminar today, our presentation, and all kinds of things that we're going to do. I hope all of you have got a copy. Did you all find one as you came in? We should have had enough for everyone. And if we didn't, we have some hidden, and I can always give up mine to the person who persuades me nicely at the end of the presentation, because I've got another one in my office. In any case, I'm Fiona Hill, the director of the Centre for the United States and Europe, and we're delighted today to be able to roll out what is the product of a joint venture between our colleague Justin Weiss, senior fellow here at the Centre, and our director of research, and a whole range of colleagues at the European Council on Foreign Relations in London, who have been out and about for the last year scaring various officials in European countries and grilling them on the outcomes of their foreign policy actions. And we did this experiment last year in 2010, which was the first year of the combined European foreign policy and the rollout of the European Action Service. And also was quite a momentous year because the focus of the scorecard and looking at European foreign policy ended just as the Arab Spring began. So the big event of the year, of the end of the year, of course, we missed because we were looking at the events of 2010 and the beginning of the year. So this one actually covers last year, 2011, in spite of the fact that it says 2012, just, and I just actually noticed that.
It's a marketing trick.
It's a marketing trick, I was going to say, because when you put them on the shelf, it looks like there's a year missing, even though this is actually just the second edition. So for those of you who had the version of 2010, this is 2011's version. And what the focus of this was, as I mentioned, is the great year of political upheavals, both in Europe's neighbourhood and the Mediterranean and North African region, and also, in fact, in Europe itself. We might have equally called it the European spring or winter or fall or any other term that we might have come across, because not only have governments been falling all across the Arab world, but quite a few have also fallen in Europe as a result of the crisis in the Eurozone and a number of other issues. This is an exciting discussion we're hoping to have today about this experiment that we have been undertaking with our colleagues at the Council on Foreign Relations, and also with some support from our colleagues at the Heinrich Böll Foundation, some of whom are in the audience there with us today, who have made an ongoing program on the future of Europe possible for us. The impact of this report has actually been already quite far-reaching. Justin has just returned after a tour of various European capitals and other places talking about the report. There's been considerable media coverage across Europe. Foreign ministers have been tweeting about it. In fact, maybe they're doing it right now, particularly Radek Sikorski of Poland and Carl Bildt of Sweden. And I noticed some people have their BlackBerries out, so maybe this is already happening again. It was also discussed at the annual foreign policy debate of the Swedish Parliament on February 15th. One nameless country, although maybe Justin might mention it, has actually had government hearings to figure out how they can improve their ranking in the report. And the Dutch Parliament has been asking rude questions of the government about the fact that they didn't rank quite so highly. So, as I say, Justin may actually be persona non grata in some places in Europe at the moment. But the big questions at the centre of the scorecard have been, what impact has the Eurozone crisis had on European foreign policy? The results for 2010 for the last report obviously were not so good. And I'm sure Justin is going to tell us that they were not a great deal better for 2011. And one of the other questions that we've been trying to look at and that we'll be looking at in the future is what impact this will have on the future of international organisations, on the transatlantic relationship, and also on the future of critical organisations like the European External Action Service. 2011, this past year, was really the first year when we could really have an assessment of many of these issues. We're also delighted, in addition to having Justin as one of the authors of the scorecard, to have two very important commentators. The first actually is a product of all of the heads rolling across Europe, Marta Dessous, who, as a result of the new government in Italy of Mario Monti, has just, in the last couple of months, been appointed as the Undersecretary of the State Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Italy. And we're really pleased that Marta could be here today. She's here for consultations in her new role. But as many of you know, you've seen Marta many times before here in Washington. She has also been for many years the head of Aspen Italia, Italia, so she's a colleague from around DuPont Circle in many respects. And she's also had a very distinguished career as a foreign policy advisor. Now she's putting everything into action for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, an advisor to the President of the Italian Republic, and also many advisory positions for different parts of the Italian government, in addition to being a very distinguished professor and author and commentator. And next to Marta, again, another very familiar face here in Washington, D.C., our very good colleague and one of the top U.S. commentators on Europe and international affairs, Charles Kupchan, from the Council on Foreign Relations and also from Georgetown University. And as I was perusing Charlie's extensive biography, I also noticed that he was extraordinarily prescient, because I see that you have in your portfolio here, Charlie, just when everybody's worrying about Europe finished, you started off as an East Asian studies major. I hadn't realized that. So he can bridge for us all of the big debates about the potential rise of Asia, the loss of the West and the rise of the rest, all of these topics. So we're very fortunate to have Charlie here as well, who can put a lot of this into an even larger perspective. Now, we're also going to now to try to do some technical maneuvering here. Stan is going to present a PowerPoint, and this means that now Charlie, Marta, and I will all have to try to leave the stage without falling down, as a big screen will descend, and Justin will tell you all the things that you need to know when you're perusing your copy of this at home later. So thank you very much, Justin. Thank you to all of you for coming and joining us today.
Thanks, Fiona, for the kind words of introduction, and I'm really looking forward to listening to Marta and Charlie and having a debate. But before we do this, before we get to this, I would like to present the scorecard of this year. Some of you might be familiar. We presented the first edition a year ago here, and basically this we have tried not to change the methodology and the approach in order to get some. To get the possibility to compare one year over the other. So basically what the scorecard is informed, I would say, expert political judgment. It remains a political judgment, but it's based on a very wide ranging information that we collected through a core group of about 8 to 10 authors led by Hans Kudnani and myself, all expert at the European Council on Foreign Relations at ECFR, except for myself, and also 27 national researchers who helped us in each of the member state countries. And this group of more or less 40 people was sort of supported by a steering group of elders who, like people like Wolfgang Ischinger or Jean-Marie Guénot or Antonio Vittorino from pretty much all of the member states and helped us realize that annual assessment. This year, again, we are assessing Europe's performance on six main issues. However, we introduced two novelties, and one of them is the fact that we combined two of the chapters of last year, crisis management and multilateral institutions, into one chapter. And more importantly, we added one chapter that was missing last year, which was Middle East and North Africa. Obviously, last year, the first year, we didn't have the resources to do it properly, and so we decided not to do it. And of course, the Arab Spring came, and so we looked really dumb. But then after that, we gathered the necessary resources, and so the six issues, as you can see, are Europe's relation with China, Russia, the U.S., wider Europe, which is a combination of the West, the Balkans, the Eastern Partnership countries, and Turkey, Middle East and North Africa, and lastly, crisis management and multilateral organization. Very rapidly, I don't want to spend too much time on the methodology, we evaluate through the prism of three grades. Two are given for policy, the policy that Europeans have led in 2011, unity out of five, graded out of five, and resources graded out of five, and the rest of the grade, so half of the grade, is for the result, or the what we call the outcome, and it's graded out of 10. It's actually a pretty simple question, set of questions that we ask. Were Europeans united around clearly defined foreign policy objectives? That's the first question. Second, did they put resources, did they put their money, troops, rhetoric, political capital, development aid programs, etc., behind their objectives, where their mouth was. And the last question is also pretty simple. Did it work or not? Here again, we conceive of Europe as seen from, say, Beijing or New Delhi, that is to say,